I think we should be close to quorum, so I'm going to call it. It is 6:34 p.m. I'm calling to order the September 11th, 2024 meeting of the WPFW Local Station Board. Ellen, please call the roll.
Okay. Irene.
She said that she would be late.
Okay. And Karen Briggs, no longer. Vanessa.
I'm here.
Verna.
Present and accounted for.
Wayne. He's not on yet.
Nope.
Okay, Michael Byfield.
Nope.
He's not on yet. Bill Curtis. He's not on yet. Violetta.
Here.
Okay. And Sue Goodwin.
Present.
Robert. Is he here yet? Nope. Okay. Donna's here.
Present.
Kamal.
I'm here.
Okay. Arthur Hyland.
Hi guys, I'm here.
Here. Okay. Andrew. Not here yet. Ambrose.
He said that he would be late also.
Okay. Patrick, not here.
No.
Tony
is just now entering.
Mariah.
Present.
Ron. He isn't here. Minerva.
Present.
Okay. Adele.
Present.
And Dennis. Let me go back and see if anybody came in.
And you didn't call Wanda.
Oh, yeah. Wanda?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Adele?
Wayne, did he come in yet? No?
No.
Michael Byfield? Bill Curtis? Robert, Patrick, Ron. Okay. Just let me know if they come in.
Okay.
Excuse me. Did you call Adele? Michael Hurst?
Oh, Mike Hurst.
Yeah.
Michael Hurst. Oh, right. The new member. Is he here?
No.
I didn't see him. Okay.
Tony Leon is here.
Yeah, we got you, Tony.
I did get you, Tony.
And Bill Curtis just still walked in.
Did you call Adele?
Okay.
Adele Stan?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I called Adele.
She's here. Okay. Well, we have enough to meet, so we will meet. Thank you all. We will try to handle things as efficiently as possible. Again, very quickly, and just for this record, again, I want to thank Donna Grimes for her selflessness and grace and dignity. And although he's not here yet, again, I wanted to thank Ron Pinchback for slowing us up before we acted rashly on the basis of incorrect information. So thanks to both of those delegates. In terms of approving the agenda, I understand that unfortunately, I apologize for this. The final agenda did not get out to everybody. So we will revert to the draft agenda that went out last week, which is pretty much the same as always. There are two changes that I'm proposing to this before we approve it. One is that the interim general manager has requested to give the last management report to reduce redundancy, and as opposed to the first one. And also, we no longer have to vote on a motion to vacate a seat that is now moot. So those are the only changes from the draft that went out. Are there any objections? And Mike Hirsch is arriving right now, Ellen. Are there any objections to approving that agenda?
Actually, what are you doing in front of you?
Okay.
And I'm not worried about the ones you already did. But.
Okay, so we are approving the reverting to the draft agenda, the first version.
Okay.
That is approved. And are there any objections to approving the any objections to approving the minutes of the August meeting? Okay, hearing none, those minutes are approved. So is do we have a program director report? Is Katia here?
Katia is not, but I'll just include some of her report in mine.
Okay, then I'm going to ask Sataria to go first and then Miyuki.
Hello.
Hi, Sataria. Thanks for coming.
Hi. That was my pleasure. Everyone, please forgive me if I rush away at any given moment. I have volunteers here helping me do some work. So, but here we go. So the first thing I start with was our our August mini drive. The dates of which was August 11th through the 25th. That includes a one-day extension. And it was $168,724. And Dennis, I apologize. I did just send this to you, which was phones and the website.
Okay.
And $8,818, which constitutes Cash App and PayPal. So we made $177,542. As of when I created this, it goes up. People call in, people send checks, and without having called in an actual pledge, a lot of times people just send money. So we'll probably see it go up a little bit. So so it did well. We were a little disappointed that we had to extend the one day. But when I compared this year to last year, we made about the same amount in 14 days as we did last year. And so, you know, it was comparable. Of course, we want to be growing and not staying the same, but that's where we are with that. Our average donation for the August drive was $131. It has been high like that for a little while now. It's usually anywhere between 125 and 140 the last few years. Let's see. All the pledge reminders and those things have gone out. We have been sending e-blasts. I hope you guys have been seeing them. I've been trying to forward them just to make sure that folks get them. So we have been promoting the upcoming events, including the walk, as well as the Reggae Fest. The walk is this weekend. If you have not participated, we invite you to still do so. The Reggae is October 5th. Same goes for that. So we invite you to please sign up and encourage your friends and family and folks to sign up as well. I heard you all talking about the newsletter. So as always, I'd like to thank Arthur. He puts together the newsletter and does a great interview for it every time. So thank you for that. That went out on Wednesday the 4th. And it did include a mistake. So in the e-blast that is going to go out, it'll either go out tonight or in the morning. It will also include the correction for the last e-blast. That will be included. This e-blast is an ask letter, which will also include the dates for the next drive, the goal for the next drive, and as well as some information about how to register for the walk and getting tickets to the reggae. We want to continue to promote those things. Let's see. We did receive, and thank you to Art for this as well. We did receive our first promise of a planned gift, a charitable request from he's the guy who called and said he'd give it. He's a longtime volunteer. He's been a member. I know he's been listening forever. I think I met him over the phone years ago before I ever got to meet him in person as a volunteer. So I was glad to see that he's someone who's participating. I would like to invite all of you to also participate. What they say, start at home, sweep around your front door. So we want to encourage all of you to join our planned giving program or become major donors. There's information about it on our website under Support Us. So we want to invite you to participate. And in the report that I sent you, Dennis, I have links for both of those things to make it even easier for people to not have to look through the website to find them. Our new dates for the October drive are October 14th through November 3rd. So that is a 3-week drive. It'll be the first drive of the fiscal year, as it usually is. And the goal is $300,000. It is critical. You know, we must not only try and reach that $300,000 goal for the drive, we really need to exceed it, because as we all know, we also have to look at maintaining our day-to-day operations while we're also trying to move, which will have its own costs. And it's going to be a struggle. The August drive the goal made out to be $87,500 a week. So our 3-week goal is $300,000. So that's $100,000 a week. We are hoping to raise at least $100,000. We hope to be raising in October. I think Katia probably has in her report some of the things she's working on to help ensure that. I'll just touch on a little bit. We're looking for testimonials to air and things like that. We've already got a goal for the drive, which we'll be, disseminating shortly. And that information will be going out not only to you all and the staff, but also the programmers and the listeners. So we, again, invite you to volunteer to answer the phones. I know that saves us lots of money. So feel free to contact Benny Jack at volunteers@wpfw.org. Again, that's volunteers@wpfw.org. Again, I encourage you to spread the word to friends, family, associates, organizations, young people in your life who are in need of volunteer hours to matriculate through school. Help us get more volunteers. So not only will we bring the money in, we'll be saving money as well. That's essentially it for me. Did anyone have any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Superior. Oh, Minerva.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Minerva. I was on a different screen. Hi, Sataria. Listen, when you talk about the funds continuing to come in, those funds, you're identifying them as part of the fund drive, or are they people just donating because they hear on the the PSA that says they can donate at any time?
I mean, it depends. Some people, when they just send a check, they'll say. If they don't say, then it essentially goes to what's currently happening, which is we're kind of in a non-drive mode. So, since we're not in drive, it goes into as a September donation purely, like it appears in the system as though they made their pledge and paid their pledge specifically for September. But some people are like, oh, I wanted to go towards this, or, I got a letter from someone that was like, I don't know if so-and-so made their goal, but I wanted to make sure, that kind of thing. So we know it's drive related. But otherwise, it just shows up as in our non-drive September month.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, and unfortunately, I didn't give an update on the Blues Fest. So unfortunately, okay. The Blues Fest did not do well this year. It barely covered costs.
Mm.
We have that it raised from the last one I looked at it yesterday, I had $2,506. I don't know why such an odd amount, but it was $2,506, which means it barely covered the cost of it. As you all know, it's been successful for years. I don't think we had ever cleared less than 4,000 for it. So it's a little shocking, but I do believe that there are some reasons why. One, with our new restrictions on how we verbally encourage people to get tickets, you know, since we can't do call to action and, you know, so it's, you know, the programmers can't sound too excited or give too much information or come meet me down at the kind of language can no longer be used. I think without that type of exciting language, that kept some people from, you know, running out, you know, from being as excited about it. Lamont Savoy actually sold, Lamont's entertainment complex and the land it's on. And the new owner did agree to continue, you know, with WPFW to do this, Blues Fest this year. But as you know, it's normally the second Saturday of every August. This month, it was the last Saturday, which I think did affect us. It did, I think it was the last or the second to last Saturday, but right before kids started back to school and had other expenses, you know, the closer we got towards the end of August, not to mention that some of the people who came through thought that it was closed, thought that Lomax was no longer operating. So, I mean, I think it was a combination of things that really prevented it from being as successful as we've seen in the past. I think Michael has a
okay,
question.
Hold on. Ellen, as you can see, Michael.
I got Michael.
Okay. And Irene came in also. Okay. Michael, go ahead.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I can. Yes.
Yes. So, a couple of things. We probably need to convene a fundraising committee because what it appears to me, and I joined the board in January, so we're in the ninth month, and I would consider myself to be an experienced member. I've served on the board before, but we're in 24/7 fundraising mode, and I feel as if there's no stop to evaluate what we're doing, especially as it relates to fundraising. And it's just as if, you know, you're just on the board to raise funds and it's nonstop. And so, I know we know about fatigue, but you know, our audience is getting older and we really need to sit down and evaluate, especially our fundraising efforts and how we go about doing that. I just wanted to make that point in light of this event that didn't pan out very well. It appears that we're just coming out of a fundraiser, you know, a few weeks ago, which we struggled mightily to make that goal. And you know, a few more weeks, we're going into the fall fundraiser. And we have an ambitious goal of $300,000 that we need to raise with our hands tied, with new restrictions. So, you know, I just want to bring that point up.
And thank you for that.
Thank you. And also for the, you know, we do have the board does have a development committee. If there's other initiatives, that you'd like to get going, anytime. We welcome all initiatives, pertaining to, the survival of the station. Okay, Sitari, do you have anything else?
No, I believe that's it, unless anyone has a question.
Okay, well, let's move to Miyuki.
Good evening.
There you go. Okay.
Thank you. Katia is ill and is having internet problems. Was unable to send you the report ahead of time, but I have her weekly summary and I can give you some of the highlights. WPFW was the first and the most successful at getting all the compliance requirements and programmers through it than any of the other affiliates. So we're the first place for completing those and getting them in. So I'm very grateful to all the programmers and Katia for following through for that. I'm just going to do overall just of some of the things she said. Special programming coming up. There'll be a special programming this weekend in celebration of Frankie Beverly and the work that he's done. Lance is going to do a special show and it's going to be extended through Lady C show. So there'll be a 4-hour special. There should be a PSA running now, advertising that. Coming up on People's Indigenous Day, there'll be another special day of programming. It'll also be the first day of our drive that will start hopefully with a strong kickoff. And sometime in between that time and now, there'll be a celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month. As Satari indicated, there's going to be a request from you all and some other audience members who listen and support WPFW to please send in testimonials. We'll be a phone number and we'll choose some of the best ones and repeat them through the drive. And in addition to that, the social justice calendar will be restarted, as well as a jazz calendar will be started in both in October. In addition to that, there'll be a special, you know about the Reggae Fest on October the 5th. On October the 20th, there'll be a special co-production with Friends of the Congo with a special event at Westminster Church featuring Mumu Fresh, Ayanna Gregory, Free Benjamin, Navasha Daya, as well as many others for another fundraiser for WPFW at a club at the church at Westminster. And I think that's just the overall call. Does anyone have any questions specifically about any of the program director issues? Oh, and there's still some meetings, some programs, some holes that are being filled and shows that are coming up.
Minerva?
Yes, Minerva.
Hey, Miyuki. Yeah, hey. I have a question. And it's good that all of the programmers did take the training. Tell me again, how many programmers do we have?
137.
Okay. And the programmers, all 137 don't have shows. They actually fill in for people or how?
The 137 programmers, some of them are substitutes, but most of them have shows or they're on shows. Or they're part of a collective.
Okay. So is there any way that we can, or is that on the grid? Is that information on the grid for the majority of the 137 so we can see who's where or how is it, how is that done?
Some of them are on the grid. There's been some transition, so I can't say that everybody is, but most of them are indicated on the grid. As I recall, let me just check now while on the phone, on the thing with you.
Okay. And if you would just want to put it in the chat or something, you can do that. You don't have to stop doing what you're doing
I'm trying to look at one of those shows with a lot of collaborators. And no, actually, they're all not listed. It's an Inside Out Collective host and it doesn't have the individual. Oh, yeah, it does. If you highlight it, you can say Inside Out Collective has got the names of all the different people in it. So you just go to the grid and highlight the show. It's got the different people who are representing the show.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, you can continue. And Robert Gordon came in, Ellen.
Okay, and so just overall for my report, our finances, as Satari stated, we made about $178,000 with the drive, which was really critical. In spite of the fact, again, that we did a month ago, a cyber attack was put upon us about a month ago today. Started on August the 13th, and it's continuing through today. We were still attacked this morning during Democracy Now! They're attacking our internet, our capability to use internet. Mo has ordered some type of device, which hopefully will arrive tomorrow, no later than Friday, that he plans to install, that hopefully will block all of that.
But they've taken several measures to counter the attacks that are continuing to come. And we think we almost have it. There's just two other major things that have to be done, and they think they can have it fully protected. But that's all in transition. So the drive was pretty good considering it was the last week of August and the fact that we had a cyber attack. We were able to flip it, leverage it, and saying that we're being attacked by unforeseen malicious forces. Please, you know, be a force of good and support the station. And many people did, and we still are receiving checks for people who are supporting us. Relocation, we are waiting for a lease from UDC still to be completed. During that time, in the interim, we have looked at some other places, which I'm not going to report on now because nothing is solidified yet. But we are trying to get out of that situation. We are at 1990 K Street as soon as possible. Michael Byfield, you had a question about T1, or you made a comment about T1 a meeting ago. I asked with Mo. He said that the thing that you proposed, or the T1, was more expensive than what we ended up doing. And that's why the choice was not to use the T1 that you suggested. The Blues Festival, as Sataria indicated, did not make money. Actually, after we get all the numbers in, we'll lose a little bit. But the 5K, Martha Peterson's been working very hard in concert with Katia, myself, and others, doing interviews, trying to increase the attendance and participation in that. We really, really would appreciate some support from everybody. But before I do that, I forgot to tell you some of the expenses that were taken care of. Let me go back to that. Magnolia Plumbing, which took care of our HVAC back in January. They threatened me with collections on August 1st. So I had to pay them half of what we owed them, which was $1,700, $3,400. I paid $1,700 and I paid the other $1,700 as we received money through the drive. Pepco, I paid $27,000 in total, because there was an amount that was, that we were paying a specific amount per month plus a little bit, and we owed a bunch from before, so I paid the full amount, that we owed. This month, we only have to pay $4,000. BMI, which is our money that we have to pay for the rights to play music over the air, we owe them $6,000. I paid $2,000 on that. I paid the tower $18,000. I paid our telecommunications, which is our internet and phone service, $1,452. And I paid telerep $2,745. And that was one of the things I just wanted to talk to the LSB about. And that is that in the past, I would see many, many LSB members at the events like our, drives. And they would be very helpful. And you really defray the cost of what it costs to have a drive. I've seen telerep bills for as high as $9,000. And by virtue of the fact that we had people answering the phones on the weekends only, mostly on the weekends, during the week it was more difficult to populate the phone answering. Vinny did a great job. But that by virtue of that, we only had to pay them $2,745 for the 2 weeks that we had the drive, which is huge. Compared to, you know, a bill of $9,000. So I saw Arthur Highland there. Thank you, Arthur, for being there. Dennis was there. Thank you very much. If I missed anybody, I'm sorry, but I'm disappointed in not seeing more of you there participating and helping. Same with the Blues Fest. I saw Sabu was at the Blues Fest. I saw Tony Norman, who was from many, many, many LSBs ago. He was there. You know, this is an event, Turner spearheaded and wants to go, and the LSB members promised to help. And maybe you weren't there when I was there, but it's just difficult to, you know, this is an event that you all supported, you all want it. And I just saw, you know, only persons from the LSB represented was Sabu and some others. Now, as Sitari stated, it was, you know, a perfect storm of bad things happening. Having on the last week of August as opposed to the second week makes a big difference because we run right into the holiday weekend and everything else. But please, you know, you all make a big difference when you show up, when you answer the phones, when you're at the events, when you volunteer and help. Same thing, Dennis and Cindy were both there at the DC Jazz Fest. They helped us man tables there because we're trying to get into the community more. And so I know you all have full lives. I know you have jobs and families and everything else. And I know that we're always asking for money support. But a way you can really help the station, by 2 hours during a drive, answering phones, it makes a big difference. And so again, the drive dates for next drive is October 14th through November 3rd. Please, if you can pick out a couple hours that you can donate and help us get through that. It's our anchor drive. It's our biggest drive. It's our most ambitious drive. And as Michael stated earlier, we're coming right after a short drive. I see some hands up. Michael, Donna, then Irene.
Yes, my question has more to do with the cyber attack, and I wish Mo was here because some of the questions I would probably want to hear from him. But I was actually listening when it happened, and I did write something up, which I've decided to submit to the board. Maybe we want to have a special session about that. One of the, and it was, you know, during Robin's show, which lasted until Caribbeana, basically, that very day I went to Baltimore and I couldn't hear the station on terrestrial radio. I was at Harlem Park at a Marcus Garvey celebration. So that's not too far into Baltimore. So if we're not hearing the station on a day when we're raising funds, which is a Saturday, I know you were on the air that day. You actually did a fantastic job under the circumstances.
Hey Michael, yeah. I'm sorry. Can I ask you hold your questions that you want to talk to Mo? I just checked with Mo. He meant to call in and he will be calling in shortly. And then you can address some of these technical things to him.
Okay.
Have other questions. I mean, I'll be happy to ask more. Is that okay, Dennis, that he just hold up until Mo gets in?
Yes.
Okay. So it's, And I hope you're on at the same time because some of it is to Mo and some of it is to you.
Yeah, I won't go. I'm not going anywhere yet.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, great. Dennis. I'm sorry. Thank you, Dennis.
Okay. Donna.
Hi, Miyuki. I was, I attended the Blues Festival and brought my father. So I noticed.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't see
okay. you. No, that's okay. But it was just, I was very disappointed too with the numbers. Because I went last year and it was very nice. And so I said, let's go again. And we had a nice time. We enjoyed the music, but I mean, nowhere near the numbers of people. Anyway, my comment, that's really a question. I think that the PSAs for upcoming events are excellent. You know, the programmers are doing a fantastic job there. You want to get there. It's very, you know, it's very exciting. Very well done. My question though is that with an event, let's say, for example, the 5K, it's coming up so soon and because, and maybe there's a reason why it wasn't promoted earlier, but people need time to figure out what they're going to do, get their money together and make decisions. And I think the public can handle more than one event, but the way we're promoting these things, it seems that we've got to give a hard push for one event. And then as we get closer to the next event, a hard push for that one. And I don't think it allows enough time for people to really, cause I'm looking at all that's going to be at the 5K and I can't be there, but I did send in a donation. I put it in the mail. I wish I could be there. It's going to be a great event, you know, but people need time to prepare. So I'm going to ask you, what's the thought behind not, promoting earlier? Is it that you don't want to bombard the public or what's going on?
No, actually we did start promoting the 5K 3 weeks ago. You just heard it more often as we get closer to the event.
Yeah.
We start at
non-stop.
Least we're trying to start 3 weeks before and it just accelerates more as it gets closer to the date because of, like you said, other things going on before it, other events, other things in the news that we just focus on, but minimally trying to do 3 weeks promo ahead of time.
Okay. Well, I would just respectfully say you may want to consider giving me a little more time. And okay. Not just, you know, a hard bombarding people at the very end, but.
Okay.
That's my 2 cents. Thank you.
Appreciate your 2 cents.
Okay. Thank you. Irene.
Thank you. Thank you, Miyuki. Good evening and good evening, everyone. My comment and question also relates to Donna's. I don't think that 3 weeks is enough time for a 5K of a walk or run because it needs to recruit runners and walkers first, and they need time to also get what we call sponsors. So 3 weeks is not enough time for a 5K or a run or a walk. The other comment I wanted to, the other question that I needed to ask Miyuki was, how much is the rent for the place in at UDC? And also, how much rent can we afford at this point?
In terms of the 5K appreciate, we're just at, we did 3 weeks before. We start moving as soon as we get the information. I think if you talk to Martha, I think Martha will agree that we started working in concert pretty early on. In terms of the rent for the place, the lease is not signed yet, but the lease is, as it stands, is going to be 1 year for free, the first year for free. And after that, we pay $10.5 a month. And that we can, and we can afford $10.5 a month.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mariah.
Good evening, everyone. I think my comment is also in alignment with Donna. And again, thank you to me, PB, and Satanya for the reports this evening. So one of the things that I actually mentioned during our outreach committee meeting, because they did kind of express that folks weren't in attendance at the Blues Festival. I wasn't there, and just kind of the disappointment there. And one of the things that I suggested was, and maybe it's been done in the past, is a shared calendar, right? Because one, there's the external marketing, which are kind of the PSAs, and then we also have the internal marketing of something like what...
Can someone mute the dog?
I didn't even notice. I'm so used to my dog. It's funny.
it's the speaker's dog, Dennis.
No, it's not, but I'm desensitized to it. But one of the things I think would be helpful would be a calendar. I'm sorry, it's the metro behind me. And something similar to what Martha sent out. So one, there's the internal marketing, right? We need this many people at cleanup. We need people, you know, here 30 minutes early for setup. I think that needs to be an internal calendar, and then something that's also external, so updated on the website. I can't necessarily wait for Art's amazing email. It is amazing to know the upcoming events. You're welcome. Or those things with, you know, a full-time job and all those other things. So I'm happy to start putting that together. The LSB is open to it because I know it would help me personally.
Yes.
That's wonderful, Mariah. Proceed. I love the fact that you present a problem and a solution. Thanks so much.
Yes, please proceed.
We'll
thank
do.
You.
I'm going to do the work up.
Minerva?
Yeah.
Okay, Miyuki and company. I'm just wondering, is there a way to look at...
Yeah.
I know the last time during the last fund drive, there was a place where it just identified... the 5K, or it identified the Blues Festival, which allowed people, even though they were donating for the fund drive, to get tickets. And I'm wondering if there could be some consideration in putting that back in place, because a lot of people, myself included, would purchase a ticket. And I've done it several times and not been able to go. But still, there was some kind of funds that came in. Is there a way to maybe look and see what support we had for the Blues Festival and the other 5K by doing something like that?
The issue, I mean, when Satari explained why the Blues Festival failed, one of the first things she said was the new compliance rules, trying to work with those. And, you know, a lot of things for the programmers are muscle memory, and we didn't want to be anyone in violation. So there were no thank you gifts within the context of the drive. But it was on the website, and there were PSAs running. Embedding in the drive is something we may be able to get back to, Minerva. But right now, this thing, it's been emphasized to me that our license is coming up for renewal, and this consent decree is very serious, and that no one wants to violate. No, we don't want to get anybody in jeopardy, and we don't want to put the station or the network in jeopardy. Therefore, we're being ultra, ultra conservative and careful. And Katia spends a lot of time listening to the air calling or texting people saying, no, you can't say that. No, you can't say that. I'm a veteran broadcaster in terms of I have 40 years or whatever. And I went to the compliance classes and I studied and I looked at everything and I still made a mistake. Something as basic as, it's for the 5K run. The 5K run, there was a website, which I said, for more information, go to the website or you can call. And I gave out the number. You can't even say that. You can't even say, or you can call, because that's considered a call to action. So I was in violation. Technically, I was in a violation. Now, it's not an egregious violation, but nonetheless, it's something that I'm not supposed to do. And so until we figure out, you know, how to talk properly within the guidelines as they are set, we have to be very careful. So I've chosen not to make any thank you gifts available while during the drive. Now, what we are doing to compensate for that loss is trying to set up a web page that's going to become like a WPFW store. You can get tickets, you can get t-shirts, you can get mugs or whatever else we decide to put up there, but that's safer for us in terms of on air than doing, embedding it in the drive. And cause what happens with the drive and when you have a lot of thank you gifts, if a programmer feels insecure or feels like they're not getting any calls and they say, well, you know, you can get tickets to the Blues Festival. That's always really good. Or you can get a t-shirt that's really, really cool. They tend to fall back on bad habits because they're so trying so hard to raise the money and becomes a laundry list that they start to sell. So, for right now, no. The Blues Festival, there's a lot of things. The compliance was huge. The fact that Lamont said he was moving, they thought it was closed, was huge. The fact that it was on the last Saturday of the month of the summer. A lot of people are out, usually it's the second week. That's a big difference because people are traveling for holidays and people are taking kids back to school. People are just not in town, you know, for that weekend. So there were a lot of different reasons, that did not, you know, go as strongly as it had in the past.
Okay. Well, thank you for that information. But what I'm hearing is that there is something being considered in terms of how to address those activities that you want to separate from being part of the fund drive. That's what I'm hearing based on compliance.
I'm sorry. Yeah. And right now we're separating anything in terms of thank you gifts during the drives of thank you. We're not offering any thank you gifts. Yes.
Okay. And again, I wasn't talking about it being a thank you gift. It's just like you said, that you're looking for a separate site where you can put things where individuals can go and sign on and do whatever to support those activities.
Yes,
okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Think that store is a great idea, by the way. Ellen, Robert Gordon, and,
I think Mo's here now. Daddy.
Yeah. Hold on.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Ellen. You got Robert.
I have everybody except for Ron. Has he come in?
No.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you though.
Okay. Yes. Michael, Mo Thomas is here now, so you can, ask your question to him.
Hello?
Yes. You're on.
Hello?
And Yellow. Mo, are you here? Yeah, Mo's here. Go ahead.
I'm here.
Hey, greetings. Couple of things on the day, I guess that was the 17th of August. I guess it started on the 16th, which was Friday during, I guess, Robin's place when we lost I guess our streaming connectivity. And lasted till Saturday evening, Caribbeana, before it came back on. But also during that time, I understand that we had some problems in terms of our terrestrial connection. Now, I don't know whether it's a low power, positioning, why I was not able to pick it up in Baltimore on the same day, but we were sort of out of range once I got to where I was in Baltimore. Here are my questions. One of the claims that I heard Miyuki stating and were using as leverage was that we had a cyber attack. And I did see your message a week later or whenever that was, 4 or 5 days later. Later, it was stated that, that we had a cyber attack and that the FBI verified that.
No. That's not correct.
Okay. So that's, to me, very, very concerning, because if you know our radio station, a lot of us talk about, at least 40 to 50% of our listeners claim anonymous. And traditionally, myself included, we are not necessarily the most trustworthy person of the FBI, especially with people having their files there, their, you know, credit card information and their personal information, to an institution that is known for COINTELPRO among black identity crisis.
No, I'll be there late, but I'll be there.
Go ahead, Michael.
And in other levels of victimization that the FBI has been known to perpetrate on people of color and other people. So that's the first thing. That is the first thing. And then the other part that I would want to find out is there real proof that we were hacked? Because I can say it was on Saturday program, which are primarily music. I know this morning we had some interruption. I think that lasted for about a half an hour. I was listening when that happened and I had to switch to terrestrial radio. So, could you just give me some answers?
Yes. But I was trying to listen to where your question was centered. So let's go back. Actually, it goes back to August 13th. And I'll try and be as brief and to the point as possible. On the 13th, we saw some interruptions that took our STL, that is the studio transmitter link, down. And Miyuki went out and made a manual switch to back to the stream, and that got us back up. I think it was a day or two later that even that was attacked, and we were able to go back to the STL. Now, question is, where's the evidence? We looked at the logs then, and we've looked at the logs since, and we have seen what is called a denial of service attack. I've explained that what that means is like creating a traffic jam where the cars you want can't get through because there's so many other cars on the highway. In this case, it's data packets. Those of you who are in the data industry know what I'm talking about. And what happens is from one or more sources, usually there are multiple sources, they literally flood the front end of our computer systems and our server systems so that packets don't get through. And we have evidence because we have logs, and I produced those logs. Majid, who is our tech support for ARC Telecom, produced logs. Otis produced logs that show conclusively the traffic was being blocked. We weren't sure where it was coming from or who was doing it, but as you know, these routes are often aliased or spoofed anyway, so we don't get to see who it is. Today, after 2 days of concerted work by me and the tech team, since Friday, I guess, through Monday, we thought we had the problem solved. And don't you know, this morning, we were blocked again, so much so that Democracy Now! Is delayed about 30 seconds. We got it back on the air. The office system was impacted. The landlines for our studio, for our guests and call-ins, are hardwired copper. They were not affected. The studio computers were affected. And from time to time, the stream got interrupted, but we got that back. And then you say, well, do you have evidence for that? Yes. Yes, we do. And we've captured those logs and, we've sent them on to the appropriate authorities. However, we now know that the attack was coming from at least one known source, with an Iraqi address. That's not to say that it was coming from Iraq. It could be coming from anywhere in the world, but that's the last known address that we were able to identify. The problem, and if you're in IT, I hope I'm not talking past you.
You're not talking past me, Mom.
Okay. The problem is that the last server, the last mile into the system, has our name on it. It literally says Pacifica Foundation Radio dot alternet, alter dot net. And that last mile connection is the last mile that comes into our studio. It's also the last mile that goes into Otis. So anybody who wanted to do us mischief and knew what they were looking for, it wouldn't take too much to look at our roots and say, oh, there it is, and attack that particular route or that particular IP from the DNS. DNS means directory name service. And by the way, Mike, you may know exactly what I'm talking about. I have to explain this to everybody else because otherwise we get into alphabet soup and nobody knows what I'm talking about. So what are we doing about it? Well, today the Verizon circuits are all down and the ARC circuits are up. The good news is that the transmitter STL has been pretty robust and we've kept it going. I turned in a rather complex trouble ticket to Verizon this afternoon and they did some intrusive testing on the transmitter side. The STL came back up. I did reset the stream because that's going through the same pipe and that's up and running. And I've been monitoring the system on and off all day. The problem is the attacks have been on and off all day. We think they are timed deliberately. The morning attack began just before 8 or in the 8 o'clock hour. And then we see it again at the 11 o'clock hour. And we don't think it's a coincidence. In fact, there were too many things that went wrong that just went beyond the chances of coincidences. I am not a conspiracy theorist, but I can tell you conclusively that there are too darn many coincidences for this to be just some accidental occurrence and over a long time, which is where we got the evidence from. And I hope that answers your question, Mike.
Excuse me, Mo, so you're suggesting that specific programs are being attacked?
I think, yes. I think, for example, Democracy Now!, probably any one of our topical programs that we run in the daytime are subject to attack.
Okay.
And then, Dennis, if I could interject, Mike also mentioned about FBI. It was reported to the FBI with hopes that they will investigate it. It was never said that they were investigating. I mean, it was reported to them as well as the FCC.
Yes.
And as well, you said something else. Never said. Oh, the credit cards and all those things were not affected. They were not. And I said that on air and I said that in the statement. They were not. We don't keep them on site. There's no way that anyone can get that information. So all of that is safe.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Does that answer your question, Michael?
It does, and I don't want to tie up any more time, but, you know.
I tried to be as comprehensive as I could with the answer. Yeah,
no, thanks. I appreciate it. You know. I have some other questions, but it wouldn't be fair to ask those questions.
Okay, I'm going to hear from Verna and Wanda, and then we're going to move on.
Yes, Mo, basic question. It sounds like perhaps all of the Pacifica stations are being included in this cyber attack.
Didn't see any evidence of that. Right now it's just us. And I think it's because we're in Washington, but that is not to say that it wouldn't or didn't happen to the other stations. I just haven't heard. Otis said that he had not seen any other reports.
Wow. Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Verna. Wanda.
Hi. I've noticed while listening, and this happens, quite often, actually, it sounds like the sound it gets slowed down.
Yes, I can give you a short answer to that without taking up a lot of time. One of the issues had to do with coding. So we were coding at one rate. Otis was recording or coding at a different rate, and that caused an apparent slowdown. So that was one cause. We hadn't had it before, but we had it after all this other business happened. The other issue is that when Mike or whomever is on the board hits the 20-second time delay at the studio, while the time delay is rebuilding, the audio will slow down. And that's what goes out on the air, slowed down audio. So those are the two causes for that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, if I could add one quick thing. I just want everyone to know that Mo was in Houston, San Antonio, actually, when that hit on that Saturday. And I called him at 6:30 his time, 7:30 our time, when I started realizing there was a problem. Though he was on vacation, he worked diligently from 6:30 a.m. Houston time till at least 10:30 p.m. our time when I left the studio and he was fighting with Verizon about making sure that we were getting back on air. So it was really, you know, to say that he, Frenchie, and Otis did a lot of hard work is an understatement. They did an incredible amount of work on a Saturday and to get us up and running or keep us going while we were doing the drive. And I want to thank them publicly, as I've already thanked them privately, obviously, but
thank you.
Like, you know, how hard that he worked to make keep us on air.
It was quite a technical team, and you've heard the names before, but we all worked together cooperatively to identify the problem and get it solved, or at least get worked around on that day and every day since.
Right. Thank you. Kamau Harris, are you around here? I saw you come in.
Yep.
Don't hide.
I'm here.
Okay, it's time for Finance Committee.
Sounds good.
Well, let me do this.
All right. I don't have anything to share tonight. I'm on a different device, but the Finance Committee met on the Monday, September 9th. At 7 p.m. via Zoom. We had a slight delay in the committee meeting. I was at an earlier meeting, so we did not start exactly at 7. We ended up at about 7:30. Members of the Finance Committee currently are myself as chair, Sabu Hakim, Tony Leon, Eileen Rosin, Julie Hewitt, and Dennis Williams. Our agenda that evening was a call to order, roll call, and approval of the agenda, report from our interim general manager, discussion on budget preparation. We had questions and then we adjourned. I won't go over all of what the IGM presented. Muki presented quite a bit already. I will just kind of add to it briefly that the cost of the cyber attack, we in an effort to kind of get back some of what we think was lost in the attack, there's an estimate of about $20,000 in loss in order to file with the FBI. So we had to put a number, attach a number to it, and we're looking to get maybe some recoup some of that through a business interruption insurance. So right now the policy we don't believe actually covers business interruption, but we're still looking into that. So budget. So right now it's imperative. We are at the final weeks here for fiscal 24. We currently only have information on our financials from our national office through quarter two. And so we're still waiting for Q3, then eventually Q4 in order to see where we are financially for the end of the year. As they work on that, we are working on our budget, trying to anticipate what our expenses will be in fiscal 25. Still looking to work with the chairs of the committees here in the LSB to incorporate all of what they may have on their slates for fiscal 25 to make sure it gets into the budget. It was nice to see some people who normally don't show up at the Finance Committee meeting. We had some folks from other stations, and individual from KPFT gave some really good insights on and suggestions on how to monetize. I'm sorry, that was not Nancy. She gave some really good suggestions on how to give some time to other nonprofits through this underwriting that we need to incorporate. Underwriting has been available to us now. There are some rules around it, but we don't take advantage of it. And so one of the things I wanted to highlight in our discussions on the budget was not the ordinary ways in which to raise funds. Underwriting was mentioned, and of course, a way in which to bring in major donors. And what Muki didn't mention to you tonight, but I'll take an opportunity to now, was that the major donors are being cultivated through the Jazz and Justice Circle, giving them some special access to both the general manager and program directors, And also giving what has been lacking, apparently, with some feedback from some of the major donors, which is actual follow-up from us, extending thank yous with letters, phone calls and the such, and making sure that, a gift isn't, does not go unrecognized. We often, receive our donations, and myself being a programmer, we see it, you know, come in through the, through the tally and things like that. But on the back end, kind of working a lot harder and a lot more closely to really thank our donors. And we think that simple gesture will also maybe garner a little bit more in the way of additional funds. Member Rosin, suggested that monetizing the HD stream might be something also that we could work towards in terms of raising funds and improving our budget and our bottom line in fiscal 25. So ways in which we can do that, I'm not sure. On the next 2 weeks, the Finance Committee will be meeting, each Monday to try and complete the budget so that it's ready for, review by this, committee. Well, first by the Finance Committee, then by the full board here. And then, of course, it will go up to the National Finance Committee for their approval and eventually on to the PNB. So I'll pause there. Not too much in the way of dollars and cents. Oh, currently the balance in the tourist account, cash position for the organization right now is $88,710.71. I'll pause there.
Okay. Yeah. I have a quick, comment. Thank you, Kamau. Earlier this year, I believe it was Ron Pinchback who had volunteered to head up a, sort of a working group to investigate, the underwriting initiatives. And then that was kind of put on hold when the whole, the compliance, issue, hit from on high. But, that probably should be, looked at again. So I will connect with Ron and, see where we are at with that. But, yeah, I would like to see if we, you know, to get that back on track and see what we can do. If the rules from Pacifica have been clarified to that, then, we can use that as a framework to, I know there was a framework before, but, people got nervous after the compliance, problem. So maybe we can look at that again.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, currently KPFT has, two separate underwriting agreements in place, where they've cultivated, a small cachet of nonprofits that are given about a 30-minute time frame a week on air. And, you know, with the, litany of nonprofits in this area, I mean, we shouldn't, it wouldn't be that hard to cultivate, those nonprofits for us and, you know, work towards their, you know, getting their contributions, for, their support there. And then also, she mentioned a particular lawyer down there in Houston that, also has a prison show that will, support the station, for that time as well. So opportunities abound. And again, you know, the staff is small, and, you know, technically on this board, we have about three times as many people. So I think that it's incumbent upon us to try and cultivate these underwriting agreements and really push, to make this, revenue line, a positive for us.
Great. Thanks. Any other questions for finance? Okay. Is that it? Come on.
That is it, sir. I will close with that.
Okay. Thank you. Irene, is there anything from the development committee?
The development committee meeting was preempted due to the special, was canceled due to the special meeting that the LSB had. It was slated for that time. We're due to meet this month. And, as I said in many other meetings, we were working on a calendar of events, and we'd like to get some of the LSB's events penciled in on those calendars as soon as possible. Sataria was working on a list of events as well. Mariah, we're we're more than happy to have you help us out with that. There are not too many members working on the development committee, and we need all the help that we can get. So any attendance would be appreciated. It's the last Thursday of each month, the meeting. And it's on the website. That's it, Dennis.
Okay, thank you. All right, then, Kamau, back to you for relocation.
Okay. Let me get everybody on this. Okay, relocation committee. The relocation committee members are myself as chair, Addie Stan, Verna Avery Brown, Ron Pinchback, Vanessa Dixon Briggs, Wayne Bruce, Robert Gordon, Dennis Williams, Mukey Williams, Mo Thomas, and Stephanie Wells. The committee meets every Wednesday of the month except the second Wednesday during the LSB meetings. We meet at 7:30 p.m. via Zoom. We met during the month of August on 8/21, 8/28, and we also met last week on 9/4. I'll read the summary from the report that was handed in. To date, as the report was written on 9/9, the committee is still waiting on a fully executed lease from the University of the District of Columbia to review. We voted to pursue the services of an attorney to assist in the review of this lease once it is received. Two attorneys are being considered, and the committee expects to be able to vote on the preferred counsel at the next regular meeting, which is 1 week from today. One property in Silver Spring still remains under consideration. The committee asked our broker to request an updated letter of intent and provide financial information to the landlord. However, our broker has advised against this, as negotiating two leases simultaneously would be seen as operating in bad faith, bordering on unethical. Going forward, the committee has agreed to continue to accept property referrals from the public, WPFW staff, volunteers, and LSB members. These referrals will be numbered and retained as a list of properties that could be quickly referenced if needed. The current lease at 1990 K Street Northwest expires on 12/31/2024. This makes for an expedited turnaround as it relates to identifying station assets required for effective and efficient broadcast and those that have no appreciable value. Management will video record the entire suite at 1990 K Street, identifying the assets to be moved. Management will submit this recording to the committee in order to obtain quotes from at least three professional moving companies. In conclusion, the committee will meet on September 18th, 25th, and then again on October 2nd, 7:30 p.m. via Zoom. That's our report. I'll ask any committee members, because I don't think I ever do that, and I apologize to my finance committee members as well for those who would like to kind of circle back on that, but if the chair allows, but, if any committee members would like to support that, or chime in on the relocation, please do. All right. That's the report. Any questions?
Okay. Questions? Wow. Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ambrose.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I couldn't find the hand raised button.
Okay. Go ahead.
Kamau, am I understanding correctly that, there is currently negotiations going on for a potential?
Yeah, we put a letter of intent in and signed it with the University of District of Columbia, and we are awaiting a lease back from them. We have not received it. It's been about 30 days since that signed LOI was turned over to them.
Is that the one that was mentioned earlier where the first year was free and subsequent years was $10,000?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and loosely. Yeah, the LOI does include that.
Mm-hmm. And so that is different from the Silver Spring property?
Correct. Silver Spring is a kind of a plan B that we had. It was actually very, very competitive. as well. And, but that is a different property. Silver Spring is on, Bonifant Street, and the UDC property is on Connecticut Avenue in the district.
Okay. And so the broker is saying that, cause I know that, you know, I had communicated and suggested a property. And I think that the feedback was that the broker suggested you don't want to negotiate two properties at the same time.
Yeah, because we were asking, and what the committee wanted our broker to do was, basically, we were going to have our ED sign an LOI, get the broker to give it back. And the broker was like, you really don't want to have two leases in hand at the same time and trying to negotiate two leases. It's, you know, pretty much bad faith, I guess, in the industry. So he recommended against that.
And is there a time frame for the UDC property? For an answer.
You know, it's been a while. You know, we're sitting on bated breath and, you know, waiting for some response to them. He's been in contact with their broker, basically daily, and, they're a one man shop, their attorney. And, you know, he's got some issue with, school starting and some of the transition from summer to, the new semester. So we're just kind of getting caught up in the flow. Unfortunately, but yeah, we're expecting it any day now.
So, okay. Any day. That's good. Cause I'm wondering to what extent does the delay hinder our ability to, seek and even put, an LOI or any other thing in place for another property if that does not come through in a timely manner.
Well, there's two different things going on. So what we were trying to do with the Silver Spring was obtain a lease. And what he's saying is that we can go out and seek, letters of intent and ask for more information. It's the, whole process of us signing the letter of intent and submitting it back to the landlord and being in a position with two leases in hand. You know, the committee has agreed to still accept any referrals or anybody that would like to send back. Some properties that they may have found, and we'll kind of collate those and use those as we see fit. But no, there's really nothing, stopping us from looking at properties. It's this whole issue of having two leases in hand.
Okay. So the last thing is, my last question is there a, order of priority with the properties? I mean, I'm assuming that the first priority is the UDC property. And is there a second priority, that can be moved on, in a timely way? In other words, let's just say that you put in a letter of intent to the property that I suggested and you get feedback quicker than you're getting from UDC or quicker than you're getting from another property. And then you can sign a lease and then they can actually cancel that letter of intent with any other property, like on that day. So I just wanted to get a sense of, because if you said we got to be out by December 31st, then time is of the essence, both in our work, but also, in the response that comes from the letter.
I think I understand what you're saying. So you're asking, can we quickly pivot from what we're doing right now to something else, right? Is that what you're asking?
And is there a kind of hierarchy in terms of priority properties?
We have two properties right now. The one that we're working on at, UDC, number two was our Bonifant property in Silver Spring. And number three is anything that we see that comes in that we would like to move on quickly. There is something that's come in recently that looks very promising, but that has not been brought to the committee yet, for review. So we're still some question marks there. But there was a referral that came in that looks pretty promising. So we're still waiting on more details. It's very, 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 very fresh and new. So we're trying to figure out all the details from that property owner. So there's three in the hole. There's one in the hand, two in the hole.
And is the Ward 7 property off the table?
Is the what one?
The Ward 7 property. Is it off the table?
No, not at all. Like I was saying, everything that we have has been collated and we're keeping that. Right now for the Ward 7 one, the issue there was that the brokers were the same. The broker that is, part of the UDC, property that we're currently working with is also the broker on, in Ward 7. So our broker was like, he's not going to do it. He's not going to call in.
Right.
And work with the same guy. It just looks like it's totally, just bad faith.
Right.
So
right.
He's not going to do that.
We have to wait on UDC before we can even approach the,
Yeah. I mean, since that's the same person and our broker knows that broker pretty well. Yeah. I mean, we can very quickly move and get a little bit more in depth on the Ward 7 property for sure.
Thank you, Kamal.
Okay. Adele, if you're still up, I was going to come to you next as a committee member who hasn't been heard from yet.
I was just, going to, say what Kamal just said about the same broker, representing the two buildings.
Okay. Thank you. Tony.
Thank you. I just wanted to know how long we're going to wait for UDC to respond. It's already been 30 days. They're holding us up. How long do we plan on giving them?
We could put that question to the committee, but you know, we feel like this is a very, very solid deal. Over the 10 years, our average rent will come out to about $12,000 a month. Very, very economical. The location is ideal. It's on the street. The neighborhood is safe. It's by a metro. So we're not anxious to leave this particular situation that we're in. So, you know, we'll give it some time for them to come back. We really feel like we want to evaluate the lease, before we just, you know, cut bait. So, I'll put that question to the committee next week and I'll come back here and give you all an answer. But right now we're still seeking to get a response from them.
Violetta?
Hello. Good evening.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, most of the outreach committee report has been given.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I thought you had your hand raised for
No. Okay. No. That was an error. I'll wait.
Okay. We'll be back to you. Michael.
as a former chair of the relocation committee that brought us the last two places, both L Street and K Street, where we are right now, I feel as if our decision is our committee, relocation committee, going to make the decision as to where we actually move to and go into $12,000 a month over, I don't know if it's a 10-year period or what. I don't know whether or not that is a decision that is the best decision in terms of the current market, in terms of, you know, what I see in terms of a collapse in commercial real estate market. But not only that, I heard about Brother Ambrose's proposal several weeks ago of a property that he knows about, which I would think that we would pursue vigorously. But it appears that the brokers are the ones making decisions for us and not necessarily the committee. And if that's the case, why do we even have a relocation committee if that decision is now, and you know, taken over by brokers who may have their own conflicts of interest or in terms of their you know, their commission structure. And I'm just totally bothered by that because it appears that we're not making any kind of decisions in terms of that. You know, we can't, you know, we're a radio station, and how I see it is, I know the last time we did this, none of the properties came from a broker. We, as a radio station, had people giving us property, and we looked at it and handed it to a broker and said, look this over for me. You know, I listened to the PSAs. I thought we did an excellent job, and I still maintain that we are a radio station. And in the same way Brother Ambrose brought the property to us, that we probably still have a good property. We may have to wait until the last minute. You know, utilize our December the 31st, 2024 option. That's my spiel. Yes.
Okay. I've got Minerva, Bill, Adele, Wayne Bruce, and community comment. So between you, you all have 7 minutes. Minerva?
Okay. Thank you. And thank you, Kamal, for the information. Question that I have is, earlier we were told the lease amount, and I know this is an estimate, was around 10.5. Now you're saying it's around 12. Does that include utilities, or is utilities separate from both of those amounts?
Yeah, the 10.5 is the first year. I said over the 10-year period, the average rental cost is $12,000. It does not include utilities on either one of those amounts.
Okay. So, in essence, what is our utilities on a monthly basis? Do you have any idea?
The only utilities we pay right now is the electric bill at the tower. That thing has fluctuated quite a bit. I think it was a high of about 20K, a low of about 4,000. So you could split the baby somewhere in we'll call it 8 grand a month, something like that, at the tower.
Okay. So the 8 grand on top of either 10 or 12, correct?
No, we don't have this new lease would have an electric bill that we don't have in hand. We've been looking to get an average amount on the particular property. We don't have that number currently, but the 8 grand is a static number, essentially an estimate I just threw out there. I don't know for sure on, the averages since that last one was pretty high, but the, electric bill at the tower would not go away. Okay. Regardless of where we move, that's always going to be in place. There would be a particular utility bill at this location of which, we don't have any averages on right now.
Okay. So this could conceivably put us back close to what we're currently paying or a little bit more, correct?
No.
No.
No. I mean, you could say that, but I mean, what do you mean?
Well, and let me ask, what do you feel
would be $5,000 a month? Is that what you're asking?
A guesstimate or something. What can the station actually afford to pay on a monthly basis? And just looking at what we're currently doing and how we're struggling to meet these, fund drives and things of that sort. What can we pay? Could we pay like $7,000 to $8,000 a month to be somewhere and then pay utilities on top of that? Anything that would bring us below $10,000 or $12,000 a month with utilities included?
So yeah, we kind of went over this. So what the committee went in to try and do is get somewhere in the market of 25 to 35 a square foot. We wanted to pay roughly $8,000 to $10,000 a month in rent, over the lease term. What we found out is that the market, coupled with the fact that our financials are in a dismal state, it is very difficult to secure anything, you know, in terms of leverage. Our leverage in negotiating is very, very limited. And so, you know, we were trying our hardest to find something that both was going to be economical, that had, you know, some reduced amount of build out since our lead time was so short. And of course, the build out in of itself would have to cost money. So, with this particular, property that we're considering, there's minimal build out. And yes, are we going to take a little bit of a hit on the utility? Sure. Can we afford $12,000 a month? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, currently, at the $17,000 a month, you know, we could pay that, but we would be essentially, you know, breaking even. Or kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. So this savings, the committee believes of about $5,000 to $6,000 a month over the lease term gets us to where we're affordable. Provided though, provided that we continue to raise funds and improve our fundraising. All right. So there's some conditions in there for sure. If you think that we're going to stay the same and afford, you know, an inflationary market, it's not going to happen. It's 2.5% escalation every year. And that's no matter where you go on a lease.
All right. Thank you. Just looking at, what it's going to look like within the next few years and who of us to keep pushing to make sure those type funds are there for the station. Thank you.
All right, Bill Curtis, you have 1 minute.
Absolutely.
I have a question about UDC. And then I have a question to follow that.
Well, 1 minute.
Well, maybe I should come after community comment.
Maybe you should.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
Okay, you'll be up next. We'll move to community comment now then. So let me just record. We got Bill, Wayne, and Adele. All right, for community comment, we begin with Eric Ramey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always a privilege to address this board. Thank you for the opportunity. I just listened to, I've been listening to the relocation reports for several weeks. Let me just say, if anyone in authority at UDC or the district building is offering WPFW unfiltered authority to air whatever it wants on 89.3, something is suspect or fundamentally wrong. If anyone authority at WPFW or Pacifica's convention district is receiving unfiltered authority to broadcast whatever it wants, something is fundamentally wrong. The UDC property that's being discussed for WPFW to relocate is supposedly coming with the first 12 months free. Mr. Chair, I respectfully suggest nothing in Washington or on earth for that matter, other than love given us from our mothers is free. What we're not going to pay up front, we will certainly get a bill for later. This deal with UDC is a short-term solution for a long-term problem and actually creates more problems than it solves. Most immediately, WPFW will with this deal, we'll come under the umbrella of the D.C. government, and we will forfeit both our artistic freedom and our editorial autonomy. Our progressive edge and our provocative programming is at stake and at risk. Worse still, our station will come under the indirect supervision of the House District Committee, which is run by GOP maggots, and controls D.C. government finances. This deal, based on that, in my view, is bad for Pacifica, it's bad for WPFW, and it's bad for the community we serve. And quickly, on a separate note, it's somewhat apparent that a discussion needs to be had about the role of officers, not only on the LSB, but on its various committees, especially the role of the chair and vice chair on committees, and the order of succession if or when one of those positions becomes vacant. Without this much-needed dialogue or clarification, the board is in imminent danger of imploding. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for other members of the board for allowing me to speak.
Okay. Am I on? Anyone else from the community would like to speak? Thank you, Eric.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, D.C. Actually, Eric just was totally eloquent on the point I was trying to make. It came up of actually having for the station at several years ago. I can't remember fell through. It was very controversial at the time for political reasons. They're, first of all, entity are representative of the corporate class, which favors war. And completely statement. I raised the question earlier in the year of our co-sponsoring, the station co-sponsoring by the government with regard to the mayor's senior festivals, and it's very problematic in itself. You know, you don't want to be identified with a particular administration. Hello?
Sorry.
Hello?
It's hard to hear you. It's like
you're breaking up a little bit. Can you get something else you can do?
Okay. I don't know. Can you hear me now? Is this better?
That sounds better now. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Going on. I don't know what's happening.
It is a clipping.
But basically, okay. Okay, but basically, a few months ago, I raised the issue of WPFW co-sponsoring events with the government, specifically the mayor's senior festivals. And I think that's very problematical. A lot of her policies are very, very controversial. I'm a part of the senior community, subsidized housing, and it's just not a good idea to be tied up with the government this way for all of the reasons that were articulated by Eric. And it's in, you know, our mission statement as Pacifica is to be anti-war. These governments are far from anti-war. The other point that I wanted to make, and I don't think it's a good neighborhood for the station to be in. It's a very upper middle class neighborhood, despite the presence of UDC. It's just not a, I can't see that as a place where we would really do outreach to the communities that are most in need of our services as an alternative news source. I don't think it's an identification we want. The other issue that I want to raise is that of community comment. I'm very concerned about what I think is de facto. Community comment at 8:13, I again could not get in. But the comment, I don't think it is supposed to be community comment, not community question, and has been answered in part by someone in management, and then we get 30 seconds to rebut that. It would seem that if there are a few people who want to speak, at least, I wouldn't expect to have 15 minutes, but at least people should be given 2 or 3 minutes to begin with, and then 1.5 to 2 minutes for a second round if there's time. Otherwise, it just becomes a complete formality. And Miyuki, I was glad to hear that Katia had made a concession in acknowledging on air that that there had been a problem and tried to correct it. But that the central point that I was making is that the issue would never have come up had Katia been consulting properly with the entity that she's supposed to be working with in the LSB, which is the programming committee. So this, I think that there really needs to be a change of policy on this. And I have not been able to get in for a second round for some reason. I have no idea why. I'm not doing anything on my end of the phone. Thank you. Hello?
Yes, thank you. Is there anyone else?